Happy day after coup day, everybody.
Did anything happen yesterday?
I had a weird dream yesterday.
Yeah, I thought there was nothing going on.
Apparently,
you know, it is interesting though, because you know, we started off yesterday morning with my talking about how I sort of wanted yesterday to be episode 150, and I got my wish.
Did you? Were you one of the Antifa that infiltrated those peace-loving Trump supporters to make them
at
the Capitol?
Yeah, I was. I infiltrated them so well that I was invisible, along with all the other Antifa members.
You see those pictures of the dude wearing fur with like neo-pagan tattoos and stuff? That was me.
That was you. Oh my god. That's a great disguise.
Yeah, I also had to like carve off of large chunks of my body fat. So I'm gonna be in pain for a little while, but it was worth it.
For the effect. Oh, good. All right. Well, I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Mark Van Stunek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And so we had coup day yesterday, right on schedule, and I was oh, so Wiley was the guy on the cell phone, okay?
Yeah, I saw you. I didn't recognize you because I've only really seen your Facebook picture, but yeah, we did good yesterday, like inciting insurrection, apparently. Because this is the thing, like this isn't, you don't have to go into Parler to find people saying that it was the Antifa and anarchists you infiltrated. Like everyone's cousin is posting on Facebook. And so people really believe it.
Yeah.
Really, like it doesn't make any sense, but it's a powerful narrative apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. And so one of the things that we really want to focus on today, I mean, obviously there's kind of a million directions we could go, different things to talk about, but one of the things we really want to focus on today is how all of this really is kind of another in a long, long line, right? This isn't new. I don't want to hear, oh my God, this has never happened in America. this is another in a long, long line of this battle for whiteness and white supremacy in America and trying to maintain that hegemony. And just real briefly, out of history, I mean, whiteness was created to suppress slave revolts. You know, the people were trying to rise up against the oligarchs, and this idea of, okay, we're going to divide and conquer by saying that those of European descent are now white and can work and buy their way out of slavery, whereas those of African descent cannot, was very successful in putting down the creation of a society that actually cares for people. And so whiteness has been trying to maintain itself and has been maintaining itself through violence, mm-hmm. Through insurrection. The level of hypocrisy around policing that was evident yesterday, if you don't see that and get that, you're in a delusional state, right? I mean, so here are police kindly escorting insurrectionists down the steps of the Capitol. Believe me, there was none of that going on here in Minneapolis. or in Portland or any of the other kinds of places.
No.
Nobody was getting tear gassed. They arrested like 20 people or something. We really need to see this as a further unmasking of some of the deeper toxic realities of America and ask ourselves, do we really want something different?
Yeah. And if your answer is yes, I want something different and it's Biden, you can maybe listen with an open mind or just go to YouTube and watch something else. Because this is it was ridiculous yesterday. There's a patheticness to it. I'm not done being scared because I don't know where this could go. Like the number of people who believe in Trump and think he's been wronged and want to fight for him is not an insignificant number. It just,
well, right. I mean, 74 million people voted for this guy, which is why all these congressional wing nuts are still, we're still objecting to certifying the election last night.
Yeah. So this isn't a done deal. Even if yesterday was pathetic and strangely police supported, it was bizarre. And yesterday was not a successful coup. But we don't know where things are going to go. And we should be concerned that this is now it's normal in our society. And so the temptation is to say, oh, I just want this to be done. I thought 2020 was bad enough. 2021's worse. But oh, I can't wait till we can have some sanity. Oh, Lindsey Graham is being sane. if people like that, he's a return to civility. If he can reach across the aisle and work with Biden, I mean, that's what we're looking for. I'm like, no, that's just another form of white supremacy.
Yeah.
This is a little bit like, whether this is an intentional design or not, this is kind of it's the good cop, bad cop, but then you forget they're both cops.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And so, that for people who are upset with, this phrase defund the police, which, Biden says we shouldn't use. I'll be happy with policing institutions in America when all of these congressional people who have advocated overthrowing the election are arrested for treason. I'll be happy when thousands of white nationalists who are advocating overthrowing the government are arrested for treason. I'll be happy when all of these white nationalist organizations are infiltrated and destroyed by the FBI. If there was a serious effort to do those things, I'd be like, okay, I'm willing to rethink my attitude about the police. But until that happens, when I see the Capitol Police taking selfies with people that have just stormed the Capitol, what's going on here, right? And what's going on here is that the police and all of the Congress people who are suddenly like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I'm not in support of any of this. When, of course, they've been fomenting it right alongside Trump for 4 years. Until they're held accountable, yeah, this is just another form of white supremacy.
The people who are disavowing this, who have at the same time been fomenting this, aren't upset because it got violent. It's because it didn't get violent enough. I mean, if it had been a bigger coup thing, if there had been tanks rolling in and seizing things and Trump coming to power, they wouldn't have been as upset. I think they're more upset that this was just kind of pathetic than it was that people stormed the Capitol.
Yeah.
Let's just be real, because what else did they want? Like, why are they still insisting in this? They don't really believe there's going to be this orderly looking into the facts, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh, wow, here's a couple hundred thousand votes that we somehow missed. Like, that's not going to happen. They know that. They're trying to incite people, and it just didn't work the way they hoped. Some comments coming in.
Lots of comments coming in.
Rochelle writes, it's kind of funny watching people share photos of well-known fascists and saying that they were Antifa. If you're going to make that claim, don't share a photo of Matthew Heimbach. Okay, he's a non-entity. Like, I saw that picture. I'm like, that's the dude from the right rally. But people are like, okay. Then there's the guy with a tattoo from a video game that kind of vaguely looks like a hammer and sickle, and they're like, communist. Like, no. Don't do that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so pathetic. It really, yeah, it's so pathetic.
Kathleen writes, ironic that the storming of the Capitol happened on Epiphany, when we remember the Magi who had visited Herod, a king who did not want to be replaced. I mean, it's right. you know, I'm not a big liturgical calendar guy. I mean, I follow it because it's useful, but that might be proof that this, you know, calendar is divinely inspired, because that just is a perfect lineup. I just got to say, yeah, it's perfect.
Well, no, I mean, we have a, you know, we have a tremendous opportunity here to wake up. And this is the thing, when people talk about, you know, how does God work in the world? And, you know, we have this weird thing that gets promoted that, like, God is some micromanager up in the sky with a bunch of, like, post-it notes with our prayers, you know, trying to, like, get through the stack and do everything for us. And, you know, all these ridiculous kinds of things. And, you know, to me, looking at simply the reality that there is these confluence of events and open moments that are occurring all the time, we are being given these opportunities to wake up. You know, and this is how wisdom works in the world. And, you know, we can take the opportunities or we can pass on them. And, you know, when people talk about people having free will, you know, that's a lot about what this is about. Like, we, you know, God gives us plenty of rope to hang ourselves. And yeah, the fact that this happened on a day when we celebrate wisdom and we see so little wisdom, but then we also are given an example that is so stark that we actually might become wiser. That's very cool. But we have to take the opportunity.
Dave writes, apparently West Virginia State Representative Derek Evans has been a secret alpha agent all along. He was there. Yeah, Comrade Evans, he's come to the meetings with regularity and consistency.
Yeah.
Stefan writes, this insurrection was ridiculous, to be honest. Color revolutions here in Eastern Europe were much more serious. You know,
Stefan's watching from Eastern Europe going, man, you guys can't even do revolutions and insurrections very well.
I agree with you if we're talking about these neo-fascists like being failures. However, they didn't, the far right hasn't lost like really much at all. Like we're further to right than we were 4 years ago. The left is tired. And then anyone who's progressive, I have no way of measuring this, but I really believe that they are willing to settle for a lot less than they were 4 years ago. Like, all that is just works in the favor of this neo-fascist kind of movement. But at the very least, with the conservatives who seem nice, who've only benefited from this, like Mitch McConnell, like we like to make fun of him, but he has more power. Like, yes, he got downgraded a little bit because the Democrats were able to kind of seize the Senate, but not quite. Like, this is the wimpiest left resurgency I've seen. We've had a ping pong before. This is not enough to be excited about. It's trash. So the insurrection didn't need to succeed. It's already been succeeding in a weird, strange way, if you think about it.
Yeah, one of the things I said yesterday is the bar is now so low that archaeologists will dig it up and excavate it hundreds of years from now. we're in a very bad place in a lot of ways.
You're being so glum, Dan.
I know. Sorry.
Khan writes, yeah, kind of bummed the whole place wasn't burned down. I mean, I'm sympathetic to that, but I want my people to burn it down.
Right.
Oh, gosh. Adam writes, I never had push. Pooch?
Yeah, I've never known how to say it.
I know the word by sight, but not by sound. Yeah. Seems to be more accurate of a term, and it doesn't have any cool factor, FYI.
Right.
fair point. It's a link to a book from Wiley. People saying 2020 will end on January 20 makes me so sad. Yes. The inauguration isn't a bookend from a bad era into a new great glorious era, unless we make it that way.
Yeah.
And it's not coming because people voted for Biden Harris. Scott writes, we've seen plenty of white Antifa and anti-racist comrades met with real state repression and police violence. So it's wrong that this is just about race, but also how racial and political class ideology are so entwined that the state and its police know which unruly white mobs are traitors to America, and which to open the gates for.
Nope.
Yeah. This moment teaches us how race, class, ideology are intertwined. Sorry for the, we got it. The typos weren't bad. This is true. Like, this is kind of what we're talking about today. Like, we have to know who the enemy is.
Yeah.
It's not the people wearing bed sheets that are obvious. Like, of course they're the enemy to good things. But they're still relatively outliers, even though they're gaining momentum and strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this system, this capitalist system, the white supremacist system.
Well, right. And, you know, and this is one of the things, I think, in terms of white folks participating in creating our own liberation and transformation, is that, the white Trumpoids are mad at something.
Mm-hmm.
And are mad, and they have something to be mad about. They've just been brainwashed into being mad at the wrong people. You know, and this is one of the things yesterday morning when we were talking about, you know, this book comparing the standard of living in London in the 16th century to that of Native Americans in the 16th century in North America, who had an infinitely better standard of living. You know, the Western European colonialist capitalist project gives most people a horrible life. You know, I mean, white people are just not willing to admit that we just don't really like our life very much. You know, we've been brainwashed into thinking that we're horrible people if we enjoy ourselves. We've been brainwashed into thinking that if we take a rest and aren't working 24/7, that we're bad people and lazy. We've been taught to accept these horrible jobs that don't pay a living wage, to pay taxes to a government that doesn't take care of us. We know that our society will deprive us of healthcare, shelter, food, at a moment's notice if we don't perform properly. I mean, this is not a life that is enviable for the vast majority of people. And so, yeah, people have a right to be angry about that, but we need to know the right people to be angry at. It's not black and brown people. It's the white overlords. And those are the people to be angry about.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways. Like, it makes sense that people are fooled. I mean, FDR pushed for this great tax project where then all of a sudden there's the single biggest redistribution of wealth in the United States history. And so we had this bump after World War II. And so that's what all these conservatives are like. Oh, I remember back in the day, or in my parents' time, people had so much abundance, white people mostly. But there was this abundance, and it's been taken from us. And so then there's narrative of where it went. And not even like a correct narrative of where it came from. The conservatives will not acknowledge that that prosperity came at all from taxation, right? So there's this all these lies going around. And so it's okay to be upset that you can't afford stuff. And it's okay to be upset that things seem to be getting worse. But yeah, the narrative is so thorough. And it's, you know, we're seeing with this Trumpian shift, people willing to believe increasingly absurd stories instead of like the really obvious truths.
Yes.
And that's the thing that scares me the most long term. Stefan writes, I support anarcho-Bidenism. Google it. Oh, I wish. It's a cool meme, though it's also a good position. Leftists supporting Biden is a lesser evil than criticism. I like that theory. I'm suspicious.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think we have a good track record of leftists coming behind a centrist candidate and then successfully pushing them anywhere, because they're in power and they don't rely on the power of the people to stay there. Not really, unless there's a strong movement. And that's what we have to build now. And it's a lot of work. But Gil writes, a failed coup is usually followed by a successful one. That's happened in the past. Like, there's been pathetic attempts that led to later successful attempts. I definitely have some concerns about what is to come. Like, we're not prophesying that a coup is coming or things are going to always necessarily get worse, but we should really be we have no real reason for unbridled optimism right now. There's no reason for that.
No, there isn't.
Bert writes, one of the feeds I was watching all day was from someone on the inside, and the comments were very rabid. Oh, my God. I don't even want to. Well, I'm curious, but I don't really want to know. Some were on the nose as more violence, please.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, if there, I was seeing screenshots of stuff on Parler of, and, you know, what it reminded me of, if you haven't seen the movie Cold Mountain, it's a really great Civil War movie. It's if you're not into watching violence, it's a pretty hard watch. But just the beginning, you know, is to me very instructive and reminds me of what you're talking about, Bert, and what I was seeing from this parlor. You know, at the beginning of it, because it takes place in the South. And so, you know, there's all this talk of the Civil War. And you see the same thing, right? All these guys, you know, running like, yeah, we're going to have war. It's going to be great. You know, let's go to war. Civil War is going to be so great. And again, this is part of this, you know, white demonic fever of violence, right? That yeah, let's just get violent and take over and get what we want. And absolutely. I mean, all that stuff is going around on Parler. There were all these screenshots. Yes, we want civil war. You know, we can't wait for blood to run in the streets and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's a very real deal.
Yeah. Scott writes, that's a great point. They're upset how silly it looks and can't reconcile the open contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah's right. So much white on white violence.
Yep.
Adam writes, I do not believe he got 74 million votes by a long shot. There's a real threat, but it is made to seem like they have more numbers than they do. I think a lot about the board probably paid attendance at events with embarrassingly low numbers, protests in the news with a dozen people, and paid counter protesters shipped into Washington football games at U.S. Bank Stadium. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to figure out. Like, and so many people vote and support Trump just because they think he's just better than Biden, but there aren't like full on. So it's hard to really measure the weight of this. And then plus the right doesn't really have a protest culture so much. They're developing it. So it's just all a big mess.
Yeah. See, I actually, I do not believe in, you know, voter conspiracy theories on either side. I don't believe that the Russians stole the 2016 election. And I do think he got 74 million votes. I believe that the votes were cast and counted accurately. And, you know, having traveled, driven a lot of places, you know, because we didn't fly this summer at all because of the pandemic, but we did drive a bunch of places. And having driven across large swaths of America this summer, I have no trouble believing that he got 74 million votes. I mean, you know, there, as soon as you got outside of any city of any size, it was wall-to-wall Trump, wall-to-wall Trump.
When we go and visit my mother-in-law, it's just total Trump country. Now, like, that's not to say that there isn't active voter suppression. Like, they're able to do that. That's the thing. Like, rich people are able to buy stuff, buy votes, like, honestly, and they're able to gerrymander and do all this stuff. And so I don't know if we need to have some sort of more covert system than that. But either way, it's like, it's messed up. And we can't just rely on voting as usual to get accomplished much of anything. We have to push different pressure points. And there's the fact that the Tea Party started with a group of paid protesters, completely manufactured. I don't know much about the origins of the Tea Party, but I feel like rich people are already paid protesters. Catherine writes, another take I saw today. This was regrettable, but what can you expect when an election was stolen and white Trump supporters were judged and treated terribly for so long? this gets under my skin, both for the appropriation misdirection of oppression language and the implication that the rest of us just don't care enough about white people's needs in our quest for justice for all. That it is such a, it's hard for me not, whenever I hear this sort of thinking from a conservative, the word snowflake jumps to my mind because they've been using it so long as a derogatory comment. And they're like, they're making the most snowflakey statements I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I don't like that insult to begin with, but man, if it applies to anybody, it applies to them.
Yeah, and you know, this is a very well-known tactic for hundreds of years for those who are in power, which is that you create a crisis. So those who are in power, who want to stay in power, they create a crisis, and then they say, "Oh, look, there's a crisis. We have to respond to the crisis." And then that helps them to stay in power. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it's like, you know, the idea that the election was stolen was created by Trump and all of his supporters. And then all these people are like, the election was stolen. We're mad. And then they can say, oh, look, there are all these mad people. The election was, you know, we need to placate them. Right? And they're never willing to admit, oh, we caused the crisis to begin with. The crisis isn't real. We created it as a vehicle for maintaining power. Mm-hmm. And for those who are, you know, being formed by this crisis creation process, they largely do not have enough awareness to go, oh, wait a minute. Like, why am I mad about this? Oh, I'm mad about this because the person I'm worshiping told me to be mad about this. I'm not mad about it because there's anything to actually be mad about. But it's incredibly effective tactic.
Adam writes, yesterday was meant to scare us, to make us feel like this is some insurmountable force. It's definitely an intimidation tactic. Like, it's the way abusers work. Like, they gaslight, and then if something bad happens, that's the abuser's fault. And the abused has to rely upon the abuser just to get through it. It's like, see how much you need me? Like, there's this sort of thing that happens all the time in abuse situations. And this is really how we're, it's an abusive relationship. We've said that a lot. People say that a lot, but it's true. This government is abusing us. And it's not just the Trump people. Like, this works in behalf of Biden sticking to the middle. Like, right now, the Democrats control the House and Senate and the White House. And, you know, it would be realistic for us to ask them to maybe push things more progressive. But we know that's not likely to happen.
Well, we have to make it happen.
We have to make it happen. Biden's going to stick to the middle and talk about healing and unity and stuff. And so things like this actually serve that goal of like needing to stick closely to the middle. Stephen writes, not to get all conspiracist here, but seeing the cops respond to these insurrectionists has made me feel this whole thing was planned in advance. Mm-hmm. I think that's a reasonable suspicion. I have no way of knowing if that's true or not, and maybe we'll never know, but it's certainly like, whether it's planned or unplanned, it works out the same way. Sympathetic white cops working with white protesters in their white supremacist goals.
Right. And see, this is where I think that, you know, having a systems perspective really helps on this, because when you have a system that is operating in a certain way, there's actually a lot of things you don't have to plan. It just happens because that's the way the system is designed to happen. And so having white cops be sympathetic to white protesters of a certain type, that just happens spontaneously. And, you know, we've seen that all the time. You know, somebody I think mentioned yesterday, or Becca mentioned yesterday, that the anti-masking protesters, I mean, these white folks have been taking over government buildings and meetings pretty consistently, you know, for the last 10 months. And the cops just let them. And that is not because the cops have planned it with them, but it is because they are part of the same whiteness system that simply causes them to respond in a particular way. And, you know, that mechanism is in place.
Mark writes, it's so discouraging to see these working class folks supporting Trump be so close to grasping the root of what is behind their economic marginalization, but who double down on capitalism as though it's going to save them rather than continue to grind them under the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. No, absolutely.
Scott writes, I'd take them much more seriously if they decide to storm Boeing and Amazon and Wall Street HQ. Then we can talk about the Capitol.
Right. Well, that's why yesterday when we went live, we were talking about how this is not a protest, right? This is not a protest. This is a fascist mob. Because they are not protesting the system as it is, which they would be if they were storming Boeing and Amazon and Wall Street. They are storming the Capitol to maintain power.
Yeah, they're trying to help steal the election just for the sake of status quo. And then it's brilliant. Like the conservatives, it's a brilliant tactic to just always accuse your opponents of the things that you do. I mean, it really,
yeah,
it's a rhetorical 1-2 punch. Kathleen writes, I saw a guy who brought in a huge Confederate flag. How could this not be about race? Yet I didn't hear any commentators specifically point that out. Yeah, I saw a lot of articles. Some people mention it, but a lot of them were just wanting to make sure they're called far right wing protesters instead of white supremacist protesters.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few people that talked specifically about the Confederate flag person carrying it in. And yeah, I mean, it's not just about race, but race is very much at the center of it, but race as it intersects with economics and class, because the reason why we have this racism issue has so much to do with the economic system that was created that needed all of this free labor to make it work.
A lot of comments left. We're going to have to just blaze.
Yeah. We're going to have to cut people off.
Yeah.
We'll be all Antifa on the comments.
Yeah.
And destroy them.
I know actual racist supremacists, and they all think the guys in bedsheets are clowns. Yeah. Generally, I agree. Your new racist dresses like a normal person, if not a little more dapper. They don't use slurs because they know that will get them shut down. Their goal is not immediate supremacy, though that would be great, but just to move the bar far enough to the right that it keeps shifting the discourse. That's why today's middle was the 90s far right. That's all amazingly accurate. And this is why having these clowns around is so useful, because then your regular white supremacist can point and say, look, I'm not a white supremacist. Look at those guys. Mm-hmm. And this is how it functions. And then like our whole society seems to go along with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stephen writes, the problem is that white anger is coddled and black-brown anger, even when justified, is suppressed and leads to bloodshed. My most anger yesterday came from seeing all the lies accusing the mob of representing Antifa and BLM. Ugh. Yep. Right. That's right, Dan. Misdirected anger. Not to mention if they were to correctly direct that angst, they would need to admit how much they've given and lost for generations, identity, humanity to the system. Yeah. It's terrifying. Like, it's really, I don't want to downplay how hard it is. Like, I mean, I've been working on this stuff like most of my adulthood now, and it's painful. If I could have justly avoided having to work on myself and question and challenge things, I would have done that, because it hasn't been pleasant. Now, I do it, like, and this is the thing I think Dan pointed to earlier. We have to remind people that they actually hate their lives. The only reason to do this is because you think there's something better for you on the other side of it. So like this is part of the narrative challenge, is how do you help like angry white people realize like they hate their lives and they're blaming the wrong thing.
This is why this image of this conversation between Jesus and Nicodemus about being born again, we've Christianity has really cheapened that, and mainline Christianity is now afraid of that idea. But from a spiritual life and practice point of view, I mean, what we really are talking about is this very powerful transformation. And I think it was Amy that was talking yesterday about how, yeah, if you admit these things, it's very painful and you're kind of cast out into this wilderness and you have to recreate things. And so you need some motivation, but, you know, part of that motivation is, I mean, if you look at, I mean, even if you are a reasonably successful white person in the society right now, I mean, if you look at any metrics, whether it's mental health, whether it's, you know, how well your children are doing, whether it's, you know, your sense of job security, whether it's, you know, how much money in the bank you have or what kind of crisis you can respond to. I mean, all of the metrics are pointing in the wrong direction. Right? We have to like look at that and go, well, wait a minute, what I want to point in a different direction.
Yeah, people kept on saying it was BLM, but it was the palest chapter of BLM I've ever seen. Scott says, I'll work with the anarcho-Bidenists too if they decide to storm Boeing and Amazon. Same standards apply. Stephen, responding to Rochelle, says, and like, weren't they wearing masks? There were so many clearly and easily identifiable QAnon supporters. Hard to imagine people fall for this stuff. Ceres writes, we are a failed society before a failed state. We have to organize and create with the assumption that we are fractured. Not just the other person, but ourselves are fractured and are conditioned to be a bully as a way to fight back against being wronged by others. We need to do a collective and personal step back to tend to our collective inner child and re-enter and recenter the rites of passages. I mean, you're talking about this deeper work of like relearning how to be human. And yeah, which is the necessary work in the midst of a time when we have a system that is proactively and actively turning us less human. So it's like we have to fight two battles at the same time, and that's exhausting, and that's what they want. Rochelle writes, I know anti-fascist researchers were having a field day with all the unmade faces. Librarian Gus here. I posted it yesterday and I'll share it here again. Video on the successful violent coup in late 1800s North Carolina that transformed that state in a way that has repercussions even today. So for those, I don't know which thread this is on, but go look for that or Gus's Facebook page. These events should not surprise us if we're reading our history, U.S. American or that in other countries.
Yeah.
Stephen writes, Snowflake is, as a pejorative, is ironically only used by snowflakes. I mean, it works for calling white people snowflakes because it's pale and cold. Like that's, I mean, this is where the analogy starts to work really well for these folks. Adam,
very demeaning to snowflakes, though.
Because snowflakes are beautiful, amazing, fractal.
Wonderful things. Yeah. They're very unhappy about this.
Adam writes, they were very transparent about wanting to steal the election, though that may be a different consideration. I think about a handful of people wreaking havoc in Minneapolis and the feeling here that they were everywhere. It's terrorism. And the goal of terrorism is to create terror in the minds of people. If you believe you're a bigger threat than you are, if people believe you're a bigger threat than you are, even when you are dangerous, you're more likely to gain power. That's right. I think that's true. I mean, this is why they have to amplify this stuff. So it's a balancing act because one, we don't want to like assume that everyone, we don't want to overplay the threat, but at the same time, like there's a way in which the Democrats are also underplaying the threat. So it's a very messy deal. Gus writes, if folks want a fantastic book on crisis, natural or manufactured, doesn't matter, as a policy tool, check out Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine. Classic. Almost done with the comments here. Stephen writes, the healing conversation for moderates seems like such a clear way to kowtow to the far right under the guise of unity. It's so obnoxious. Yes. It leaves power in the hands of the most radicalized right-wing factions. How do we counter it?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the ways that we counter it is we need to keep calling it out. And we also need to get very, very specific about what we want that's different. And that's one of the things that I know we're way over time, but you know, that's one of the things that's very important in terms of organizing in this kind of work is that we need to have very specific assertions and goals in order to make changes. So we can have the broad conversation and analysis, but then we also need to say things like, and what we need are actual economic reparations.
Yes. Or,
and what we need is a 90% wealth tax. right? So we also have to have these very, very clear, specific things. And then when, you know, the Biden administration comes back and says, oh, well, we can't do that because the senator from West Virginia is a conservative Democrat and won't vote for that. We got to be like, well, fine, fuck you. We won't vote for you in the next election. And so we need to have both. We need to have the broader and deeper analysis, but then we need to really come very hard with some really specific things that need to be different in our society. People need healthcare, people need housing, people need food, people need a certain degree of economic security. And there are very specific ways to enact those things.
Mm-hmm. Let's have this be the final comment from Kevin. Is this a right-wing death rattle or a fascist birth pang?
Yeah, could be either. That's Steve the opportunity writes, and the threat.
Yes, Kevin. Steve Garrett writes, Kevin Trant, yes. So, we'll see where it goes.
I think we need to have Steven's count.
Okay. The last one. I guess I am pale and cold and beautiful and fractal.
There we go.
You're a wonderful, unique snowflake. See, that's a power right. If you say it that way.
So thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll be back tomorrow.
See you next time.